Welcome to the Signs of Safety Exchange podcast. I am Claudia Lynch, the Signs of Safety Implementation Lead for Toronto Children's Aid Society. In the series of podcasts, along with guest speakers, I explore anything and everything signs of safety to provide you, members of our organization, with a deeper understanding of signs of safety, our clinical framework, and how it is integrated into practice across the service areas. Let us grow and foster a culture of learning, critical thinking, and reflection towards deeper clinical practice and service excellence. Now, let's get into the episode. Welcome to this episode of the Signs of Safety Exchange podcast. This episode is part one in a two-part series focused on the Signs of Safety Assessment Map, most often referred to as the Signs of Safety Assessment and Planning Framework. I am pleased to be having this conversation today with my two guests from ELIA International. ELIA is the home of Signs of Safety. Kay White Bell is the interim CEO of ELIA International, and she's also a licensed trainer and consultant, and she's based in the UK. Ophelia Makwashi is currently a board member of ELIA International, as well as a licensed Signs of Safety trainer and consultant, and Ophelia is based in Sweden. Warm welcome to you, Kay and Ophelia. I'm really happy to have you join me for this two-part series.
Well, thank you, Claudia, for having us. Looking forward to this podcast.
Yes, me too. Thank you also, Claudia, for having us on. And I'm really excited to have this discussion with you this afternoon.
Kay and Ophelia, if you can, would you be able to share two to three points about yourselves, your background, your role at ELIA, to provide our listeners with a further context of who you are and what brought you to this conversation?
Well, I'm Kay White Bell, and thank you for the introduction. I am currently the interim CEO for ELIA International. And as you've said, I live in England, but my roots are actually in Jamaica. I have been a qualified and registered social worker for around 30 years now. So very long time. So to try and condense, you know, what I've been doing over the time, and that leads me into signs of safety, could take a little bit more than two or three sentences, but I will definitely condense that. So I became licensed signs of safety trainer and consultant probably about 11 years ago now. And what drew me into the signs of safety approach was the fact that the approach puts children, youth and families first. It reduces the complexity of child protection out of the work that we're doing into something that is so much more plain language for families, for youth. It's visual. It really places the families at the center of the work we're doing, but also gives us a toolkit of how we can engage really well with families, even whilst there are significant worries about the child's welfare. And finally, I just want to say that as the interim CEO, I became the interim CEO back in November of 2022. And that leads me to have oversight of somewhere between six and seven jurisdictions across the world. So that includes, of course, Canada, the USA, Europe, United Kingdom and Ireland, Japan, Australia and New Zealand.
Wonderful. Kay, what such rich background and experience, and so happy to have you along because ELIA are our consultant for the next 2 years and really looking forward to learning so much from you. So great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Ophelia, what can you tell us about who you are? What brought you to this?
I will try to top Kay's introduction. But my name is Ophelia Makwashi, and I come originally from Ghana. So that is the question you always ask you in Sweden to introduce yourself. People ask, where are you from? So I am originally from Ghana, been living in Sweden for many years. And I came in contact with Science and Safety 2001. and have been working with the approach ever since, and being trainer and consultant, and just love the approach. I love the humility in it, the transparency, the directness of the approach when families are involved or when we are involved in the families. So I am probably one of the few within Elia who has always been working as a caseworker alongside being training consultant as well. And so I am put in the front line and can always relate to different situations that the workers and the managers and the supervisors face it when dealing with their children and their families. So I can easily relate to that. And I feel fortunate or rather blessed to be able to combine those two to support organization to implement and sustain the approach, at the same time working in the practice, in the actual front line. So that is what I love about Science of Safety, and probably will always work with this approach.
And what I've heard you said in many spaces as well, Ophelia, is that you intentionally stay close to the front line to keep it real for yourself.
Yes.
And to be so relatable to the actual work on the ground. Thank you both for sharing both your backgrounds and experience, and well positioned to have this conversation today with respect to the assessment map. So Kay and Ophelia, thinking of the assessment planning framework and thinking back to when you were first introduced to Science of Safety and even now, what would you say you have come to really appreciate about the Science of Safety assessment mapping process that you would like to share?
Okay, so Ophelia, maybe I'll jump in first, and and you can perhaps come in afterwards. So, you know, when I first became acquainted with Science of Safety, as I was saying in my introduction, that I just loved the fact that it simplified the complexity of the child protection or child welfare issues that we're dealing with. But the thing that I also very much appreciate is that it's a balanced assessment of risk. So we're not actually just focused on the worries. And, you know, when we've been in this business for such a long time, and perhaps talking with external professionals who, for them, their job is to, if I can put it in quotation marks, is to dump the worries onto the social workers. And so when you look at the assessment map, all we might have had would be the first column, just full of worries and nothing else. But with the assessment map, it's a balanced assessment of risk. So you've got, of course, the worries, what brings the family to our attention, but also you've got the middle section, you've got the scaling question, and you've got thinking about what would safety look like going forward. There's a focus on behaviors, there's a focus on the evidence. So it's not just about my opinion, but it's also what I'm seeing, what others are seeing, that leads us to come to a really robust analysis. And the one thing that I would say, one of the things that I started to use quite early on in my use of Signs of Safety, was that it's a bit like the map is a bit like a math equation where you show you're working out. So when you're doing a math equation, even if you're not quite sure of where the answer is, the teacher would always say, show me your workings out, because I can see where you're going with this. And we can then work together and understand it and move forward. So that was something that I started to use, a kind of like words that I used in my early career with Signs of Safety. But it really is, because it's a balanced assessment and it's showing my workings out, and it's transparent, it's visual, and the family can see where I'm going with this as well.
Great. Ophelia, anything you would add to that?
Yeah, I will not repeat what Kay said, obviously, but I will just say what I love about the mapping process is the honesty that it brings to the table, its transparency, and its concrete of what has happened and what has happened, the impact, what is the impact it has on the child. And I always say that after you have done the mapping, if you cannot bring forward a clear analysis, then you don't have any case. So you have to be able to analyze the impact, what has happened on the child psychologically, mentally, spiritually, physically, you name it. And also what it's so humble, I will say, about the mapping process, that it reminds me on about the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, Article 2, I will say, that where it says that it applies to all children, whatever their race, their religion, or abilities. And Signs of Safety, or the mapping process, really visualize and make it very concrete that every child is special and should be, and the assessment should be done within the context of where that child is from or the teenager is from. Yeah. And that is what brings back also to the 12 principles on how to build partnership in Signs of Safety. Yeah. So I think it's just a humble approach. Very humble, and it sees the individual, it sees the person behind the worries, what the worries might ever be. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with what both of you shared. I know for me, what I really appreciate about the framework is that it reduces the possibility of assumptions around the situation and the risk. Yes. And it really forces us to engage the people who know most about the situation to get a good context, an accurate context of the situation, to be able to formulate an analysis that is transparent and really captures the seriousness of the concern, balanced with the good things that are happening in and around that child as it relates to the worries, but also really emphasizing that partnership and collaboration to getting to a place where the worries are sorted out. That's what I really love about the assessment map, and Kay, something that you said is simplifying the complexity around the child protection worries, right? And I know sometimes when we are feeling that a situation is so loud and noisy for us, and the relief, or maybe relief is the right word that I see people experience once we've gone through the assessment mapping process, it provides that clarity.
Yeah. And also, Claudia, it's when using the mapping process, like you said, we all have biases.
Yeah.
Now we all have biases, but using the mapping process kind of lets you not let your own biases hinder you to gather the information. Because what we want, the actual events, what has happened, what have you seen, very concrete and very transparent. So what is what you see, or what the family see in the mapping process, that is what's going to be in the computer system as well. Yeah. Nothing else. That's what's going to be in the report, in the written report by the end of the day.
Amazing. Great. Thank you for both those reflections on the assessment map. So, you talked about the analysis earlier, Ophelia. So of the 7 analysis categories on the assessment map, harm is that first one that we see in the worry column. And so harm statement is often one that I see people struggle with or have some confusion around. So for example, some supervisor may say they advise their staff that there must be a harm statement in written documents or their assessment of the situation, while others may say not every case needs to have a harm statement. Is there always a harm statement as part of the analysis? And if so, what would you say are those components of the harm statement? And even before you reflect on that, I also want to
mention that while we are talking about the assessment map, we know that we've adapted it, or it's been adapted to service children and youth that are where the focus is not protection. So, you know, children's service or kinship as it relates to children's well-being or permanency or successes, the assessment map can be adapted as well. So in that first analysis category on the worry column, harm or critical concerns, is there always one? And what does that entail?
I will be honest with you or direct with you, mm-hmm. since I've been working with the approach since 2001. From the early on, harm statement has always been there. It's about what a summary of what has happened in the past, the worries, the past behavior. So it's a summarize of what has brought us here. And then the danger statement is the future worries that we want to build safety around. That is the worry. Does it need to be harm statement be in every case? I will not say necessary harm based on what is the actual reason for the family to be, what is the reason why there is an open case. Let's say it can be about well-being. It can be about sense of belonging, for example. It can be about mental issues. So which doesn't necessarily has caused harm, you know, but it has caused some kind of worries. So harm, I will say the term harm is not necessary, but you will need to write a summary of what has happened before you get to the danger statement. So probably that is what I will put it. What about Kay? Do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I totally agree with you that it isn't harm is always been there as part of the assessment map. So we do need to understand, you know, what is it that has brought the family or the youth to our attention. So I guess for me, it's about the summary of the worries or what has happened to this particular point. What has happened, and as Ophelia is saying, is summarizing it to what has happened to bring us to this particular point.
Yeah.
I guess the important thing is also about, again, as we've said before, it's the importance of language. And it's how we use the language to help the adults or the carers or the youth that we're worried about understand what our worries are. Mm-hmm. So the harm statement always kind of summarizes. So this is where we are to this point, which this is what brings us into your lives at this moment in time. And then hopefully from there, we can then move on to, as we work through the assessment map, we get to the place where do we need a danger statement? Or does it need to, can we close it down because the biggest worries are their families working together or they have other supports so it doesn't need our involvement? Or are we this worried that we then need to then develop a danger statement? So I think it's the harm statement is important, but it may not necessarily be always called a harm statement. As Ophelia has said, it could be something slightly different depending on the assessment.
You can see the harm statement or X statement as a segue to the future worries or future danger statement, whatever the worries is. So it's a segue. So without the summary of what has happened, it's kind of difficult to make analysis that will lead you to or take you to the next step, which is to make a safety plan or whatever plan to prevent it to happen in the future.
Right. Yeah. And so when we think about then in order to get to a danger statement, meaning what are you most worried could happen in light of what we know has already happened?
Okay. Yes, exactly.
So let's say harm has then, let's say the child or youth had been hurt or harmed. Mm-hmm. And you, so I hear your point around you need that, whether it's called a harm, it may not necessarily be called a harm if say harm hasn't really happened, but you need that summary statement in terms of capturing what has brought us, what has brought this situation to us. Now, let's say the child has been hurt or injured by the actions of an adult or through neglect or something. When you look at a harm statement, what are those key things that you would want to see in there?
I can go, and then you can jump in. I would like to see, or you would like to see, a concrete, detail, description of what has happened, concrete. So that, let's say that a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old got harmed by something that they, it's a caregivers have been done. So what will the 3-year-old or 4-year-old say that the parents did?
Yeah.
In those plain language so that the 3-year-old, the 4-year-old can understand what has happened. If the parents have or suffering from mental illness. Maybe for 3 or 4 years old, mental illness means no food in the in the fridge. Nobody reads stories to me at bed when I'm going to bed. Nobody helped me put on my clothes. I'm hungry when I'm going to bed. I am outside by myself. No one give me hugs. That is what mental illness might mean to a 3-4-year-old. You know, very concrete. How do we, what impact the health illness has on the parents' ability to take care of the child? And how do we know, how do we see it around the 3 or 4-year-old that the parents are suffering from mental illness? That is what I want to see in a danger statement, in a harm statement.
So
just to also add to that, we have, I mean, in the harm statements, and of course, I mean, your question was very much about the key components in a harm statement. So I'm just wondering, Claudia, would you want us to give you the key components in the danger statement?
I think people might be interested to hear what the key components would be. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the harm statement, as Ophelia has described, is, you know, those things that have happened in the past that brings us into the family's life right now. But the danger statement, then, if we are then worried, significantly worried about what's happened thus far, and you said, you know, this child has been injured, then we've got to be thinking about, so what is the impact if the adults or the caregivers' behavior does not change in the future? This then leads us to our danger statement. So we generally have a, you know, a kind of formula that we work with. We try not to be formulaic, but there's a way of structuring, should I say, a danger statement that will really focus the worker, but also focus the family and the network around them in terms of what we are worried about. So you'd normally start off with who is worried, and that then sets out in terms of professionals who are worried, who share the same worries. There may also be family members who are also worried. So you need to identify who is worried. The next element is, what is it they are worried about? So here we then go into the behaviors. So who is worried and what are they worried about? Who are they worried and about whom, should I say? Whom are they worried? So in terms of the adults or the youth, who are they worried about? And what is it they are worried about? So the behaviors. And then in terms of those behaviors, we're thinking about future. So the impact on the child. So why are they worried? And that is the impact on the child if nothing changes. So your who is worried and about whom? What is it they're worried about in terms of behaviors and why? So impact on the child if nothing changes. So sometimes you can see a harm and a danger statement rolled into one. I've seen several. And sometimes I will do that as well. Roll the harm and danger statement into one. But it's important to have where there are examples of past behavior that is a helpful predictor of future behavior as well.
So I hear you talk about the behavioral details. Ophelia, the word you use is concrete. you know, as a supervisor, I would imagine then, if you're trying to understand the picture from your staff and asking questions like, how do you know this to be true? Mm. What did the child say to you? What words and descriptions did the child use to describe this, right? So, Ophelia, to your example, I am going to bed hungry. There's no food in the fridge. I'm outside playing by myself. So that those are the behavioral details.
Yeah.
And so if a supervisor were to say to a staff, what makes you worried about this, for this, to be able to look to those specific behavioral details to understand it. But I would also imagine that in order to get those behavioral details, you have to be asking good questions
about
that as well.
Yes. So that you would not be saying to your supervisor, I think.
Right.
I think there is no I think when you're working with this approach. I think, I assume, no. What has happened? Who did what and when to whom?
And
give
how.
Me the detail and how and the impact on the child, on the teenager.
Yeah. And what I also recognize is that even sometimes, even being asked those questions, say I'm a worker and a supervisor asks me those questions and I don't necessarily have the answer, that is the cue that I need to be able to go back and find out. Moving on to our next question for discussion now. Supervisors have shared that the middle column in the assessment map is the most challenging because, as you all also mentioned, historically, child protection have trained us to be really saturated in the problem, and it's not as natural for us to be focused on what is working well, and even more difficult to differentiate between existing strength and existing safety. And I would even say for the adapted version as well, existing strength and existing well-being or existing successes. What would be your best advice for staying in the middle column? And what would you say would be the difference between those two analysis categories in that middle column?
Hey, so I'm gonna start here, Claudia, then again, Ophelia is going to jump in.
Sure.
So in terms of staying in the middle column, Ophelia mentioned right at the beginning about the key principles in respect to signs of safety. And one of those key principles is about honouring families. And when we go into the middle column, we are actually honouring families, because what we're doing is we are asking questions to find out about, you know, who they are. What are their attributes? What are the qualities? What are the characteristics? What makes them who they are? But we always have in mind the worries. So whenever I'm asking a question in the middle column, whether it's around strength or existing safety, I have in mind the worries. So what is it? What are the qualities that the family are bringing to the table that are great? They have them, but how might those qualities also enable us to work through and reduce the worries that have brought them to my attention or to my supervisor's attention? So we're always honoring families out there. So we're looking at ways in which we can ask questions that can then help the family to think through and their network. We're asking questions around, you know, who are the people that help you when you find life most challenging? So we're asking those questions to bring the qualities of the family and their network right into the center of the work that we're doing, which will then also help us to think through with the family. So how can some of those qualities, those attributes, help us to think through and reduce the worries that have brought you into child protection services arena as well. Ophelia, you want to just
Totally. I totally agree with you, Kay. And also by focusing in the middle column where you have the worries in your, I mean, in your back of your head, it's also a way of getting to know the family. Because what we are doing here is that you want to enable the family to invite you into their home. You want to get to know them, and they have to feel that by asking those questions in the middle column, that the questions are genuine, that you genuinely want to know them. When they feel that you understand them, then they will open the door for you. Then they are more openly to talk about the worries in more detail. But if the family does, if the family don't think that you understand them, how can I ask them to understand me as a CPS? And so when asking, I mean, staying in the middle column, you want to get to know the person who, what kind of values do you have in your family? What kind of value from your ancestors are still useful in your way of being as a parent for those, for these children or this teenager? What kind of values do you think are the most important to still hang on to? What are the values that you think that you don't need to hold on to, but you have to in terms of your history? So you just want to know what the people are in the middle column by asking very curious questions to get to know them in order to ask them to understand you.
Wonderful discussion. I think we will have to leave it there for today and pick up the conversation in part two of this conversation. But already such rich discussion, and really looking forward to continuing this in part two.
Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Signs of Safety Exchange podcast. Please join us again in our next episode as we continue our conversation on part two in the series of the Signs of Safety Assessment Planning Framework. And we will dedicate some time to answer your question as well. Until then, as you approach your work this week, we invite you to consider the lessons learned from this podcast and think about how you can work with intention to purposefully apply them in your daily work. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.